There goes your career.
Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak.
It's December 19, 2009. Time for your Gitmo Nation Media Assassination, episode 159.
This is No Agenda.
As snow blankets half the globe in an obvious overload of global warming, we're coming to you live from the Minimum Security Containment Cell Crackpot Command Center in Gitmo Nation West, San Francisco, California. In the morning, I'm Adam Curry.
And from Northern Silicon Valley, where it's cold here too, I'm John C. Dvorak.
It's Crackpot and Buzzkill
in the morning.
And it's so obvious. It's almost laughable, isn't it?
Well, I like the fact that Copenhagen apparently has a blizzard that's the worst in their history, or the worst since 1960 or something like that.
I was looking at New Jersey, record-breaking snowfall for the... Hold it, wait, baby. Come back with that.
I need that part.
Mickey just took the actual piece of paper I wanted to talk about. Record-breaking snowfall in New Jersey. Most snow in 77 years. We've got Gitmo Nation East, the Netherlands, London, completely snowed in. It's like a ludicrous joke.
It's a cosmic joke. There's no doubt about it.
And the funny thing is, people actually are saying, "Well, this is all a part of global warming because the rains and the monsoons."
That's
exactly what the planet is clearly warming up. It's
just I'm telling you, it's the ice age. We've got to go back to what they were saying in the 70s. There's an ice age coming. And they're trying to kill us. That's why they're pushing global warming, because any action we take against global warming will trigger the ice age.
The more you say these things, the more I think there's actually to it. You know, a mini ice age was predicted in the 70s.
Yeah.
And, you know, and what would constitute an ice age? Would that be minus 2 degrees? Would that be just...
Sure. Who knows what? I don't know. I'm not sure. I'd have to go back and read all the old literature from the 70s when they were predicting the ice age. And I mean, I'm sure that part of it's supposed to be the reflectivity or lack of reflectivity of the sun up and down, you know, based on certain glacial phenomenon. But
well, it's an obvious question, you know, where, you know, people don't know that, you know, of course, if water is scalding hot, you can burn yourself, but if it's also, you know, extremely cold, you can freeze yourself as well. You can burn yourself.
Well, like
the cold.
Like Bert Rutan, the mutton chopped space guy who's building this the rocket ship that Branson's going to use to commercialize space travel.
Right.
Like he says the biggest threat to humanity is not global warming,
it's global cooling. But
an ice age.
So just following the logic, if climate change is indeed... And let's just say that, you know, this whole 2 degree Celsius temperature, which is about, what is that 2 degrees centigrade? Would that be like almost a 3.6
or
something? Yeah. So you would presume that plus, you know, two degrees centigrade would be just as bad as minus 2 degrees centigrade. I mean, there's other species that count on that will have a problem, right?
Well, there's always species that are going to have a problem. A lot of them have a problem with us.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, man. I'd rather have global warming than global cooling.
Yeah, but you can always move to Canada.
Yeah, I mean, you can get cooling anywhere you want. It's the warming bit that's hard to find. It's really hard. It's hard to find the nice. You got to travel halfway around the globe in the wintertime to find some warm place. Sucks. Give me some beachfront property here in San Francisco, which
you
according
go north
to
and south, you can manage it.
Yeah.
So, got some interesting news this week. We do have an executive producer.
Wait a minute. May I please list off the important executive producers who really kicked some major ass last week? Now, I'm not quite sure. You know, chat room handles and real names is kind of difficult, but here's the following people sent me a recording of the show last week after, due to circumstances completely within my control, the show was not recorded.
Yeah.
We have Locke, a.k.a. Jim. It could also be Nerdy Dude. I don't know. We have Wolfgang.
Didn't get their real names, didn't you ask them?
Well, yeah, but, you know, not everyone wants their real name to be known. So I'm saying Wolfgang, a.k.a. C.S. We have Mike Seraph, who recorded the show today, or last week, that is. And I guess Randy. Okay. Randy Asher. These four people sent me all versions of the entire stream, the pre-stream and the post-show banter, as they apparently were recording the program. And I'm not quite sure why one would actually want to record the live stream if the podcast comes out, but I'm not complaining.
People do that.
Yeah.
They got the equipment or they got the software and they want to use it. And so they use it and then they record and then they can listen to it or download it to their iPod. They get the full experience as opposed to the canned experience that they get from after you edit the show.
Well, I don't edit the show. All
yeah,
I do
well,
is
that,
I take
that,
the...
That's a little known fact.
I don't edit the show. I take
Well,
the
you take the front and back off.
Yeah, that's all I do.
Okay, well, they get to listen to the whole thing. I don't know. I mean, people do that. They've traditionally, there's listeners... Throughout hit since the beginning of radio, when they had the opportunity to record something, they wouldn't on transcriptions or on tape or whatever they had. So that didn't surprise me in the least. I'm actually surprised there were four people. I thought there'd be maybe a couple, but probably two more. We didn't even hear from.
It's possible there's a couple more. I will say a lot of people were listening in Windows Media Player, and apparently you can just do a command line, which is WM player dash dump. And whatever you've, as long as you haven't interrupted your playing experience, it dumps out the entire file that you've been listening to. Mm. It kind of caches it all. So anyway, all of you will be listed this week as executive producers, special executive producers, for No Agenda 158. For without you, this would be No Agenda 157.
So, the Money Man executive producer is, who will be listed, of course, prominently, is Lucas Hokanson from Selkirk, Manitoba, Canada.
Lucas
and he gives $101.01.
Another playing, let's make a deal number.
Playing the Price is Right number.
Lucas,
and he says, keep up the good work, Adam and John. Any chance you are keeping your eye on Canada and events going on here?
We try. We talked about your crazy copyright regulations on the last show.
Right.
Was he referring to anything in particular?
I think he wants us to watch This Hour Has 22 minutes or something like that. We'll have to catch up with the show. Or maybe we should be running the parliaments where they argue with each other and call each other names, which is always good for a laugh. I don't know.
I had something on... I think
there's always something weird going on in Canada. I know that.
So first of all, let us thank profusely Lucas Hokanson. I'll get the exact spelling from you later, John, because I want to make sure I get these names spelled properly, and I have screwed that up in the past, particularly with Stephen Pelsmacher's
name spelled wrong.
So thank you very much for being the executive producer of No Agenda, episode 158. I can tell you that this is something that you should consider putting on your resume. It's really quite worth it because it looks good. You get to put two names who people can actually look up, so you don't look like some fool just trying to put some crazy names on there like you did something important, because you actually did. An executive producer means you're the real deal. You actually put money into the show, and you got some return for it that made you proud enough to put that on your resume. There was, you were talking about Canada and how they yell at each other in Parliament. There was something from the Irish Parliament. I think I had it in the show notes last week, where the guy actually tells someone to fuck himself in Parliament.
Like Dick Cheney.
Yeah, no, it wasn't quite that bad. I'll have to look for it later. But. We should do that in, all we get is like,
the great gentleman from the state of Wisconsin, my esteemed colleague.
How funny was that? When Al Franken told Joe Lieberman, no, you can't have any extra time. I don't know if people caught this. Now, explain exactly how this works, because Lieberman, I guess, was the chairman of a committee.
Lieberman was on the floor,
Franken was the chairman of a committee. That's right.
No, it wasn't a committee. This was the Senate.
But Franken is
had the chair. He was given the guy running the floor is the guy sitting in that big chair, and they rotate through all kinds of different people.
Oh, you want to hear this clip for a second? Because I happen to have it queued up. Okay, so this is from a couple days ago.
Finally, our amendment clarifies that the purpose of the board is not just to contain costs within Medicare, but to look more broadly at health care spending outside of these publicly supported programs. That's very significant. We'll provide an opportunity for broad savings in health care and health insurance.
And I have to say, he is getting boring.
Pretty much everybody in our country.
The senator has spoken for 10 minutes.
I wonder if I could ask unanimous consent for just an additional moment.
In my capacity as senator from Minnesota, I object.
Really? Oh, okay.
Doesn't he sound just like Stuart Smalley there? Like he's
yeah,
like he's
and
doing
I like the way
bit.
He goes, the way Lieberman goes, really?
But did you hear John McCain after that? Did you hear what he had to
no,
say?
No, I never got to hear
don't
the McCain
take it personally.
Retort.
Okay, I will ask unanimous consent that the remainder of my remarks be included in the record as if read.
Without objection.
I thank the
chair. Here comes McCain,
the senator from Arizona.
I just saw. I've been around here 20-some years. First time I've ever seen a member denied the an extra minute or two to finish his remarks.
He's literally flabbergasted. He's like, Lieberman is an independent. He's not Republican or Democrat.
Right.
And so McCain is actually standing up for him.
And I must say that I don't know what's happening here in this body, but
yeah, I do nothing.
I think it's wrong. And so I said it's fine with me that it'd be 10 minutes, but I'll tell you, I've never seen a member denied an extra minute or so as the chair just did.
If the senator would yield for that.
So what do you think the reasoning is behind this? I mean,
well, I know the backstory is simple. For one thing, to get up in front and be kind of the temporary president of the Senate, which is the guy in the big seat, he was told by the party to be really strict about the time allowances so they could plow through the debate for this day.
Right, because they want to actually ram this health care bill through.
They want to get this thing done. Right. So he was being really strict. 10 minutes is up.
Unbelievable, though. Yeah, I mean,
now you have the clips from last week, because I have something that I gave you last week because this kind of contradicts what McCain's saying here.
Which one do you want?
Well, what is you have the last week list there?
Last week was Caltrans Bridge, Howard Dean rant, 1 minute. Maybe
1 minute.
The 1 minute.
Play the one. Play 1 minute.
Okay. Oh, I'm so glad I'm so organized.
This is a committee meeting where the head of the committee, a Democrat, said, "Look, the Democrats get 5 minutes to talk to Republicans, you get 1 minute." And it was grilling McChrystal, who, by the way, looked a lot like Tigger.
He does look like Tigger, doesn't he?
Yeah.
So wait a minute. Who gets 5 minutes? How come one part side gets five?
He had some long-winded excuse for it, and I have no idea. I couldn't. The chairman went on and on about this 1 minute versus 5 minutes, and I could not make heads or tails of it. But play this clip and send a copy of this to McCain.
Okay.
The time of the gentlelady has expired. The gentleman from California, Mr. Rohrabacher, is recognized for 1 minute.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me just note for the record that I am very disturbed with a policy that has ended up with giving me 1 minute to express my opinions and to ask questions in this very important hearing, considering my background in Afghanistan. So I'm sorry. I apologize to the two witnesses. I'm going to say some things, and I just have to say it quickly. Number one, 30,000 troops, more troops in Afghanistan means $30 billion more a year. My experience in Afghanistan tells me for a small portion of that, we could buy the allegiance. We could earn the goodwill through payments to tribal leaders and village leaders throughout that country.
By the way, that is an outstanding idea. What a concept. It just give them the $30 billion
and
they'll all be
fortune.
Done with it. Yeah, and no one will die.
Without putting anybody at risk. Number one, I'd like your reaction to that. Number two, when General, your statements about Afghans fearing their militias is disturbing to me, dramatically disturbing. Militias there are nothing more than all the male children in their villages.
The time of the gentleman has expired. The gentleman from Virginia is recognized for 5 minutes.
Shut up. Sit down. Who the hell do you think you are talking sense? Idiot.
So I don't know what McCain's talking about.
If you're wondering,
he basically shut this guy off and went to 5 minutes to this next person who was just rambled for saying nothing.
If you're wondering how we get such fantastic material and that you never see this on television, on the news, or on the cable news channels, oh, maybe once in a while if you're really lucky, it's because we do something really weird.
It's what we do, so you don't have to C-SPAN.
We watch C-SPAN so you don't have to. We take care of that work for you. Before you say it, John, I agree. It's kind
actually,
of
that particular clip I got from something even more obscure than C-SPAN, but
what was
like
that?
Like the military channel or something. It was just ran into it.
No, the military. You know, I've got to put some of the. I don't have all the right channels on my favorites. Somehow.
Oh, I don't use favorites. I just go through everything.
Yeah, but do you go?
That's how you run into free speech TV and all the the stuff that's out there. We're all, but the free speech TV is very interesting because it gives the knee jerk progressive view of everything, and which is not the liberal. I noticed that I was watching Chris Matthews go on about the term progressive, which has been picked up by a segment of the Democrat liberal side of the aisle. And he was baffled by the fact that people were using this, saying that liberals have, it's gotten a bad reputation and it's as good a term as any. But the fact of the matter is, liberal is not what the progressives like to think of themselves as, especially what is termed the neoliberal, which is the Clinton type of liberal, which is an internationalist. Progressives are not necessarily for a one world government.
So who would be considered a progressive? Ron Paul would.
Howard Dean would be a classic.
And what? And and you brought this up, and I for some reason I wasn't really tuned into it last week. But am I mistaken, or is there now a general movement in the Democratic Party? Howard Dean, of course, being the chairman of the DNC.
Not anymore.
Former chairman, excuse me. Is there now a movement to find new candidates to replace Obama in 2012?
No, I haven't seen that.
I'm hearing like noises that they're prepped that there's going to be more candidates running for his seat than ever before from the same party.
Well, I mean, it could take the form of what happened to Lyndon Johnson during that era when you had a warmonger as a president and you had to get rid of him. And so they started trying to run Eugene McCarthy and eventually McGovern, Kennedy, Bobby Kennedy.
I mean, yeah, exactly. And I'm hearing. Even from left-wing Democratic voices, I'm hearing terms like the third term of Bush. Like, first of all, yeah, totally agree. As it was interesting to note in that huge defense spending bill that passed the House, I might add, that baked in there was extension of the Patriot Act to February 2010. You see, they know they need to extend this thing to continue to take away every single freedom we have. And to be able to wiretap us and apply enhanced interrogation techniques, but they want to go on Christmas holiday, so they got no time to bullshit around. We'll just slip that in over here, and we'll just get that extended until we're back and rested from our snow holiday, and it passes.
Well, the other thing is that I think has a lot of these guys annoyed is besides the fact that there's no transparency, Obama seems to be a warmonger. The only thing they like about him is he's a warmist. I mean, they all think that's fantastic. But the rest of it, they don't like Bernanke, and the right doesn't like Bernanke, but the people that want Bernanke back are essentially the Republicans and Obama.
Well,
so this has got these guys a little annoyed, too.
And he was confirmed. Bernanke continues as the chairman of the Federal Reserve.
Can you play a clip I have about Bernanke? This is, a Republican from Tennessee named Corker. I think it says Corker on there, but his name's Corker.
Okay.
And he gives the rationale for why we should keep Bernanke. And I thought it was the absolute stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Is it because he looks cool?
No, it's worse than that.
Better equipped to deal with business after that event than before. My guess is that everybody in this dais could say the same thing. It's not those things that occurred during good times that make you strong, it's those things that occur during bad times. Do I think that there's anybody in this country that has been tested more and has the ability to be chairman of the Fed right now than Chairman Bernanke? I don't think so. I know there have been comments about mistakes.
I say John Dvorak for chairman of the Fed. There's plenty of better candidates than Bernanke.
Well, that is a guy from Tennessee, by the way, which is a big football basketball state. Here's what his rationale is, this Corker guy. His rationale is the football coach has not won a game ever.
Hold on.
So what better coach to rehire because he's gone through so much tribulations that nobody would know bad times. This is a good experience, never to have won a game.
Does he say this in this statement?
No, that's what his analogy amounts to. He never says it, but that's what he's saying. He's saying, because he screwed up, he made nothing but mistakes, he did nothing right. Who could be better equipped to take the job again?
All right. In other words, it's time to apply our simple formula.
Our formula is this. We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
Yeah, that's the whole formula that Bernanke holds as well, right? Just go out, hit people in the mouth, and lose games. So he's bound to win one somewhere. That's pretty amazing.
So this Corker guy should be voted out, folks. If you're in Tennessee, what do you got this? What do you have a moron like this in office for?
Yeah.
But this, again, the Republicans, you know, just essentially not being useful.
Indeed. Hey, John, just so you know, good news.
Yeah?
There is a very large mothership, which is about 20 miles.
Don't we save this for the end of the show?
No, because I'm excited about this. It's right now it's about 1.5 million miles off the South Pole. It's a 20-mile aircraft, and it's stationary right now. And there's pictures of it. NASA, other organization telescopes have been monitoring it for 8 months. It's big, it's blue, and it's beautiful. And it looks a bit like a Klingon ship, which is a bit disconcerting. But link in the show notes at noagendashow.com. Looks like the mothership is on its way.
Well, you know, they also found some triangular thing over spot or other.
Yeah, like over the Kremlin. Like, I didn't mention that two shows ago.
Well, I didn't know it was a big triangle.
Yeah, it was like a funnel. I told you that. It was like a triangular funnel sucking up, you know, or blowing down. Who knows? Yeah. And, of course, that's the same show where you said, oh, this footage is
Well, now that you mentioned it was Russia. It was a Russian news report.
It's all
Russians
photoshopped.
The Russians have always been doing this to keep the population under control. These bogus stories.
It looked pretty damn real to me.
It looked like a Photoshop job if I ever saw one.
Yeah, but when you see 40 or 50 different pictures from independent sources, you've got to wonder if they all share the same.
Do you know any of these people personally?
John.
Just saying.
Are you a UFO denialist?
I'm a denialist.
Are you a UFO denier? Are you a savior denier? Is that what you are? You know, one thing's very clear, John.
The science is in! Science!
NASA is even seeing it, so the science is in.
Everyone agrees.
Hell yeah.
So, the Copenhagen, I got this, this came out in July, and I finally saw a copy of it, which is what caused all the problems. The Copenhagen Code of Ethics?
The city council agreed to
employ the so-called Copenhagen Code of Ethics in relation to COP15, including the climate summit for mayors. The Copenhagen Code of Ethics encourages employees and politicians to refrain from buying sex from prostitutes.
Especially when it's free. Or was that okay?
I think it became free after this was released.
Right.
The Code of Ethics also encourages employees and politicians to refrain from using any of the hotels which provide contact to prostitutes, and that tourist organizations refrain from advertising escort services, strip clubs, and brothels. Now, if I'm not mistaken, Denmark, prostitution is legal, but brothels are not.
Okay. Cool.
So why? So what? How is this ethical or unethical? I mean, it's legal. It's legal. I mean, what's I don't get it. I'm not understanding why they would put this out. Do they think the prostitutes are you know, denialists and they're going to influence the attendees? I don't know.
It's a code of ethics, you know. It's like you, when you're hosting a big political event.
I don't get the ethical breakdown here. What's unethical about taking part in a function that's purely legal in society in which it's legal?
So, ethics is something different than laws.
Yeah, I agree with that. Okay. But how is this unethical? Unethical is where you, like, you know, do double deal, or you screw somebody over, or you lie about the global warming, or you do something like that's unethical. So you phony up the numbers and then you deny that it ever happened. That's unethical. Why don't they say something about that? Going out and finding some cute blonde because you're bored, you know, and taking part in illegal.
Is that why you go to see hookers? Because you're bored? I don't know. Other people have other motives.
I'm bored.
Let's go find a hooker. You know, speaking of ethics, there's a fantastic report. I've been doing some reading. This is, Congressional Research Service. There's about 70 research organizations in the U.S. government. It's a report from July 20th titled Waste, Fraud, and Abuse in Agency Travel Card Programs. And so I want to say, so I've marked these up, and these will be linked in the show notes. You can download my marked up version. So just go to the big black boxes, read that. So this is what's happening in our government. And I'm quoting from the report, among some of the more egregious examples of card misuse. So these are travel cards where you can basically book travel on a credit card, a special type of credit card. Identified by auditors are a Federal Aviation Administration employee who charged $3,700 for laser eye surgery to his travel card. A Department of Defense employee.
They have to do it on the airplane to make it the card work?
No, they can. Apparently, you can spend it on it. You can use it for anything you want, except like pawn shops, and some vendors are blocked. A Department of Defense employee who requested and received a reimbursement for 13 airline tickets totaling almost $10,000 that he did not purchase. Department of State employee who took an unauthorized trip to Hawaii on a first-class ticket. Auditors also determined that certain agencies have not collected reimbursement for millions of dollars worth of unused airline tickets. Actually, it's close to about $100 million. Now, we scroll down a bit. Since enactment of the TTRA, this is the Travel and Transportation Reform Act of 1998. This is where they handed out these cards because, it would be so much more accountable. The dollar volume of travel card transactions has increased 89%, growing from $4.39 billion in 1999 to $8.28 billion in fiscal year 2008. The number of transactions has almost doubled. And I'm reading through this entire report here. It is Department of Defense over a period of 7 years purchased more than $100 million in airline tickets that were not used, but they didn't take the time to go and get the refunds. Huh, why bother? And of course, everyone's traveling first class, even though you're only supposed to be traveling coach, unless, I love this, there was some really funny little law in here. If
is that one of the time things where it's over 6 hours, you can do this, you can do that?
Well, more than 14 hours, but here it is. Only when no coach or business class accommodations are available is it necessary to accommodate a disability, or when exceptional, quote, security circumstances require it. Business class may be used under the same circumstances as first class, but also when coach class accommodations are available but unsanitary. What the fuck is that?
What does that mean?
It's unsanitary. Well,
hey,
of course,
somebody puked in my seat.
It's unsanitary. These guys are crazy. It's always unsanitary. By definition, you're sitting there with a bunch of cattle wheezing and coughing and puking on each other. It is unsanitary. So, of course, they're all going to upgrade to first. Not even upgrade. They're buying first class.
Can upgrade which is really
cheaper.
Expensive.
Yeah. Now, the thing, of course, that is not mentioned anywhere is no one ever gets disciplined. No one's ever laid off. No one's ever fired. You know, if you pull a scam like that in any corporation, if someone did it at Mevio, they'd be fired. I fired people for doing that. I fired people for booking things on their personal, on the company credit card and then taking the gifts. I had one guy, he had vacuum cleaners, toasters, flat screen TVs. He was taking all the perks that, of course, are company property and putting them in his own house. Wedding ring. And had to fire the guy. But oh, no.
When is a wedding ring a perk?
Well, you get it on your credit card points. So it was a corporate card, and but it was in his name, and he was in charge of a couple companies to go. He was in charge of travel for a big company, like 700 employees. Well, guess what? There's a lot of travel going on, and those perks build up pretty quick. And he was like shopping away at the Visa store. And worse, when he got busted, he lied about it. Yeah, but you get fired for that stuff. Oh, no, it's okay. Just go get your eye laser surgery.
Write a new memo.
Yeah, write a new research report. Oh, we'll do better. That's unethical. That's the definition of unethical.
Well,
that's
there
just,
you have it.
That's just nasty.
Taking advantage of the situation. The government basically is just stealing our money.
Yes, exactly.
That's taxpayer money we're talking about.
Why don't we open the gate for a second, John? So I've done some research, which I think we'll get into in a moment, as we still have a couple of news stories out of Copenhagen that we need to discuss.
It should be pronounced Copenhagen. They made a big deal about that because the Germans used to pronounce it Copenhagen or something.
I thought it is Copenhagen.
No, it's Copenhagen.
Who says that?
The Dutch. I'm sorry, the Danish.
Those guys up north.
No, check it out. I mean, there's a big deal about the pronunciation of it. Copenhagen.
It's Copenhagen.
It's a like, German pronunciation that harkens back to World War II, and they're very offended by it.
Dude, this is so not true. It's Nienhagen, Copenhagen. Everybody knows that. So
we'll hear from one of our Danish listeners, I'm sure.
Yes, we'd like to know the official Danish pronunciation. I would say Copenhagen.
Whatever. Well, that's because you're pronouncing it like a Dutch.
Well, I'm pronouncing it like our president's pronouncing it. Do you want to go through President Obama's speech for a couple minutes?
Well, if we're going to go this route, I think we should begin with something a little lighter and more entertaining.
Okay. I don't know. It's pretty funny.
Well, it'll be funnier after you listen to this, to Al Gore himself.
Oh, no. Don't tell
Al Gore himself actually reading his own piece of crap poem.
Wait a minute.
On the morning show with Harry Smith. Who apparently starts to cry.
Wait a minute, is this the stuff that we had him reading last week?
Yeah, but now this is directly to Harry Smith, who now sobs.
Let me get this straight. So we had Al Gore doing an impromptu, quote, reading backstage at some television show, which yeah. I think was...
Now he's doing it front and center.
Wait, so he's actually sitting there reciting his poetry?
Yes.
And Harry Smith tears up.
Sounds like it.
Okay, let's go.
One thin September soon, a floating continent disappears in midnight sun. Vapors rise as fever settles on an acid sea. Neptune's bones dissolve. Snow glides from the mountain. Ice fathers floods for a season. A hard rain comes quickly. Then dirt is parched. Kindling is placed in the forest for the lightning celebration. Unknown creatures take their leave unmourned. Horsemen ready their stirrups. Passion seeks heroes and friends. The bell of the city on the hill is rung. The shepherd cries. The hour of choosing has arrived. Here are your tools.
Wow. I'm so glad you read that. I was really, I'm very happy.
Thanks for asking me.
I'm happy to hear it in your voice.
Harry is amazing. He's
unbelievable.
Outstanding. Let me hear that last bit again. He's like, oh, I'm so glad you read that in your own voice. It just wouldn't have done justice if Tom Selleck had been reading it. It just wouldn't have been good enough.
I'm glad you read that. I was really, I'm very happy.
Thanks for asking me.
I'm happy to hear it in your voice.
Hold on, John. I was going to shoot myself after hearing that. What is that? Is that last bit? Is that you laughing in the background while you were recording this?
No, actually, that was I took that clip from Fox.
Yeah.
And they were laughing at it in the background.
Oh, my God. I'm going to put this as a separate bit in the No Agenda stream. And then, oh wait, maybe it'll work like this. Hold on, let me see if I can make this work. This might sound good. Let's
just run, the poll.
The hour of choosing has arrived. Here are your tools.
You will obey.
Yes,
I
like that.
Oh my God. Oh. The guy is, what is that the definition of megalomania, or am I incorrect?
It's pretty damn close.
That is outrageous.
Well, I mean, you know, it's a love fest when it comes to gore.
So what is the point of this? So I know that he's pushing his book, and of course he's pushing the entire agenda. But what is the point of the poetry? I mean, is that just another reason to get on the... Is he going to do this everywhere?
Show his multidimensionality.
Ah.
Well, he's more than just a blowhard. He's also a poet.
He's sensitive. He's more than just a dick. He's a poet. I'm going to produce something after the show for this. I like it. It's really good. I got to write that down. And I think I'm going to do my own reading of it. It's just beautiful.
You should. You should. We should do it with a laugh track.
And sound effects. Oh, my goodness.
Actually, yeah, maybe I'll do. We should do dueling poetry readings of this poem.
Okay, let's see who can do it better. Mickey, will you do a reading of Al Gore's poetry as well?
Sure.
Yeah, she's into it.
Okay, we'll make it make it a thing for a while.
No, this is what our producers should be doing. They should be sending in the best reading of Al Gore poetry because the man is clearly a genius. He should be a Nobel laureate for crying outside. What's that, huh? You do it real sexy.
He is, yeah, but anyway.
Yeah, real sexy.
So, okay, now let's move on to Obama.
Well, hold on a second. Can I just a brief pit stop at Pelosi? Who, of course,
Pelosi?
Yeah.
Jobs, yes. She says jobs, jobs, jobs again. I know that.
Jobs, 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 and jobs. Let's vote for jobs.
So, of course, we have Angela Merkel up there in Copenhagen.
Arbeit, Arbeit, Arbeit.
And don't forget that we've got Joe Biden.
Jobs, 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 jobs.
Yeah, you know, they're not trying to program your brain or anything. So Pelosi goes up to Copenhagen with 25 members of the House. And remember, on the last show, we played for you the bit where it was made very clear that they had to ramrod through this defense spending bill, which passed so that they could make the plane. And yes,
and
indeed,
then the joke of it, of course, they had to rush back in front of the blizzard coming in.
Yeah. The global warming front. And it was her 757. You're correct. It was her 757. I've had that confirmed. And so... here she is on CNBC talking about why, of course, this Copenhagen agreement is so incredibly important.
House Speaker Pelosi, on the eve of the 2010 election, says politicians have to convince average Americans that this deal would be good for them, too.
Our American people should be pleased with this for four reasons. Jobs, 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 and jobs.
Yep, there you go. For some reason, that was
she stays on message.
But it's not just jobs. It's security. It's energy security, and the way they spin this is just unbelievable. You know, it's energy security because of our dependence upon foreign oil, because we're so afraid of Canada. And it's for green jobs. And by the way, from a social engineering standpoint, I will have to admit that it is an idea to create this fake necessity for green job sectors. Of course, none of it really pays off. You know, windmills just don't pay off as well. So it would cost way too much to get too little energy out. But that is a way to kickstart a new form of economy. But, you know, they're really doing a half-hearted job. So it's just
green
kind of
jobs.
Bullshit.
How many green jobs are there going
to
be?
Yeah, some battery shit and stuff. But, you know, the president does exactly the same thing. So let's listen to, we can't listen to all 10 minutes of it, but it's linked in the show notes at noagendashow.com.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It is an honor for me to join this distinguished group of leaders from nations around the world. We come here in Copenhagen because climate change poses a grave and growing danger.
He almost, first of all, he said Copenhagen. You're right. And then he almost says clear and present danger, but he decided to go with grave. And
yeah, he would get sued by Tom Clancy.
Yeah.
To our people. All of you would not be here unless...
You all be dead. If you'd not be here. Wait a minute. Listen to this lie.
In danger. To our people. All of you would not be here unless you, like me, were convinced that this danger is real.
Now, didn't people like walk out? Aren't there, isn't China saying, you know, we want more global warming because our rice will grow, but with 30% more, they want more CO2. This is not true. They're not all there for the same reason. They're all there to get a piece of the money pie. That's what they're there for.
Well, the funny thing is that he introduces, which I find peculiar, he introduces a moment of doubt, which I thought was a kind of off message. I mean, instead of being, you know, convinced that everybody's in agreement, you know, and they all agree and the science is in, he says, you know, he suggests that there's a debate.
Well, hold on, because he does hit the sciences in. Listen.
Not be here unless you, like me, were convinced that this danger is real.
See, that this danger, that's a moment of doubt. Well, you're convinced that he's not saying that the danger is real. He's saying that you're convinced the danger is real.
Ooh, I like that. We've tricked you. So it's not real, but you're convinced it's real. Very good, John. Oh, words do matter, don't they? So he's not really lying. In fact, he's being overly honest. You're convinced that this hoax is real. That's why you're here. Interesting. As we continue.
This is not fiction. It is science.
Ah, there we go. Hold on a second.
Don't be a denier. The science is in. Science!
Unchecked, climate change will pose unacceptable risks to our security, our economies, and our planet.
I mean, how can I even respond to that anymore?
Well, yeah. So I have a clip that's kind of like this. I was watching MSNBC. People always moan and groan about Fox. But MSNBC News, they actually have news most of the day.
No, they don't. I was on that MSNBC News show during the day.
Michael Jackson, there goes your career.
Michael Jackson had been killed and they hung up on me and no one ever responded because no one watches the news on MSNBC during
No,
the
they
day.
Don't, but I did. Okay. And it's worse than Fox in terms of going the other way.
Okay.
And I have a little clip here. This is a little long, but there's a guy on, you know, I don't like Shepard Smith much. I think he looks like an alien, a reptile. But their version of Shepard Smith is Dylan Radigan.
Okay.
And Dylan Radigan really looks reptilian, and he's an unbelievable dick. But the worst part about it is that in this particular exchange, which I have here, He comes up with some weird ill logic.
Oh, this guy. Yeah, no, he does look reptilian, doesn't he? Ooh. Okay.
But not that, but he's very unpleasant. I don't know why anyway. I just don't. But anyway, here he is being just a dick with some weird logic.
With some weird logic. Okay, I'm sorry. I'll start over again.
The United States is prepared to work with other countries toward a goal of
stop. This starts off with a clip from Hillary. Then there's this black co-anchor that's grilling some Republican who thinks that most of this is bogus. And then so they start attacking him instead of, you know, trying to get his perspective. But at the beginning, they have this Hillary clip, which everyone's supposed to respond to. And Hillary pulls a fast one. If you listen to it, she talks about what we're going to do is we're going to get together. We're going to do $100 billion to all the poor countries, but if you really listen to her wording carefully, it's like some sort of $100 billion. But she never says that we're going to cough up anything. No. It's some sort of joint $100 billion. That's a nebulous number. Play it from the beginning and listen to her double talk.
Is prepared to work with other countries toward a goal of jointly mobilizing $100 billion a year by 2020.
Oh well, jointly mobilizing doesn't mean anything. I've got something mobilizing in my pants right now. It's not actually
jointly mobilizing
to address the climate change needs of developing countries.
And here I play that because this is about compromise. This is about finding some middle ground with China, especially with the United States. And again, you see this administration try to make some steps forward. And here back at home, you have what some Democrats believe, again, the party of no, tearing at it before there's even anything on the table, Brent. And I agree, there can be something looked into about the fudging of these numbers, all of that.
Fudging of the numbers. It's just fudging. Nothing. Should be looked into, maybe, but I mean, come on. Let's move on.
Why can't a part of the conversation be from the Republicans' solutions and not just, at least in that
solutions
Biden
to what?
Solutions. We need solutions. Who is this woman?
I don't know. She's the black co-anchor, and I didn't get her name.
As we continue.
Already tearing it down, and there's no deal.
Well, again, the Republican Party has offered solutions on a myriad of issues, health care among those. We're talking about climate change. I think the concern is that we've already seen what the Democrats' proposals sort of look like, because we've had this discussion about this cap and trade bill, which we're now calling an energy tax, a national energy tax, which would have a tremendously negative effect on jobs in this country. It would cost Americans an awful lot of money.
Brad, let's be absolutely clear. We're talking about a $15 trillion world economy. The economists say that cap and trade would cost about $50 billion. Yes, it's a lot of jobs, but that is a drop in the bucket compared to the worldwide economy. Why is that difficult to understand?
Well, again, it may be just a few jobs to you, David, but it's a lot of jobs to Americans that are currently out there looking for work right now. We have a very high unemployment rate. The president's poll numbers are 46% approved, 47% approved, 46% disapproved, because we have problems with jobs in this country right now. And we're talking about putting additional burdens on the job market. It's just not the time to be doing that right now.
Well, we're also talking about creating jobs in the green sector if Congress can get its act together. But in any case, Mo Alathe and Brent Littlefield, thank you both for coming on today. We appreciate it.
This is bull.
So what does the worldwide economy have to do with cap and trade that only will implement? It's just false logic.
Well,
then they throw it out there, well, it's only $50 billion, you know, so what? It's just a drop in the bucket compared to the, you know, size of the sun. I mean, it's just like there's no connection.
You know, this whole thing is this. So there's, I'm analyzing this from a couple different directions. First of all, because we can't pronounce his name, I'm convinced that's the reason. No one is talking about Rajendra K. Pachauri.
Oh, that screwball looking head of the United Nations Science, that guy who looks like Osama bin Laden?
No, he
does.
No, he doesn't look like Osama bin Laden. He looks like one of the Geico cavemen.
He's actually obnoxiously homely.
Yes. So this guy, he sits on boards of energy companies. There's a couple of great articles.
People should check out his picture. Does this guy get up in the morning, look in the mirror, and see that scraggly hair all over his face?
I look good.
And say that to himself?
I look good.
I mean, shave for God's sake.
So you have the Tata Energy Research Institute, better known
as those guys.
TERI, which is a group out of India, which of course is affiliated with Tata Steel. The Tata group,
Tata outsourcing, and
everything Tata. Before you know it, gone before your very eyes. So this
and
guy,
by the way, Hillary Clinton's associated with this company.
Yeah, well, everyone is, and this Pachauri guy, he received millions and millions in subsidies. And what happens is they create these carbon credits out of all this bullshit from his outfit, the IPCC, which he, of course, is the chair of, because of their whole global warming scam. And now what these guys do is they figured out, I mean, they're so smart. You have to really read through these three articles listed under the climate change heading in the show notes. So they close a huge Chorus, which is which they bought from the Dutch, I think. They close a huge steelmaking plant in the UK. So they get the equivalent of like 30 pounds per carbon credit. And then they can open a new plant, which they get subsidized for in India. So they're making money both ways because of this whole carbon credit scam. And by the way, manufacturing in 1997 was almost a quarter of Britain's economic output. And now it's less than 11%. And this guy he's on board with the whole program. He's like, okay, I'm going to take money from the same guys that are going to help get into this carbon credit scam. And he's on boards of energy companies. There's at least three different articles about this guy. And of course, no one cares because, you know, it's like, I can't pronounce the guy's name.
Well, they don't care for other reasons too. They've all bought into this. nobody sees the conflict of interest or cares about it.
Well, it's
the fact that they would shut down a steel mill. I mean, where's the net on this? You shut down one steel mill in England and take some credits and then open another one up in India. And, of course, India's not really taking part in cap and trade. They'll take part in the trade, but not the cap.
Listen to this. Pashauri is also a strategic advisor to several private investment and venture capital firms, including Pegasus Capital Advisors LP in New York, Sidereon Ventures in the Netherlands, established by Tendris Holding, part owned by Philips, and Houston-based biotech firm Glory Oil, Glory Hole, where Pashauri serves on the board of advisors. The guy has on every single board. He's like the spider in the web. And he's up there, like, he's not an independent scientist. And no one can, where's the profiles on this guy? Where are we doing some investigative research on this dude? No, we have to get that from World News Daily? That's where I have to learn about this incredible conflict of interest?
Apparently.
It's an outrage. And this is the guy who's standing up there, and along with Al Gore reading poetry,
science!
And saying that it's clear, the science is in, there's nothing that can be done about it. We have to move. We've got to give it $100 billion together. It's crazy, I tell you. It's absolutely crazy. And you will not hear hear this name, Pashauri, uttered on any mainstream news reporting. Nowhere. And particularly not, I'll bet you, if you were to look at any PBS program sponsored by Philips, who do sponsor a couple of these national treasures from time to time, they're definitely not going to report on this guy. Because they all inherently have a conflict of interest. The only conflict of interest that we have on this show, I can't even think of a conflict of interest. The only conflict I've had is, should I go pee before the show or hold it? That's the only conflict.
For you, apparently.
Yeah, that's the only conflict. Now, of course, the conundrum is that we're not making millions of dollars bringing you fake news wrapped in pretty pictures. We bring you real news wrapped in hokey jingles. And the only way that we can make money is if you actually support us. And that support is not just like, like some off-the-cuff thing. It's like real support. We have, we could make, with the audience size we have, we could certainly make some money with commercials. We could be stopping right now to sell you some Squarespace, some East Bay, some eHarmony, some budget render car. I could come up with tons of things we could sell. But then could we ever talk about these companies? Could we ever talk about the atrocities by shoe companies in Eastern nations? Could we ever talk about global warming the way we do if we're supporting car rental companies? No, we'd run into problems eventually. Ergo, we need your support, and we need a lot more of it. You've heard our executive producer donations consistently go down. Now the top donor on a weekly basis is about $100. I'm not scoffing at it, but it's not enough. There's two guys here. Did we get any other money in this week, John?
Yeah, let's go over some people who gave us some donations and some notes. Jack Hovermail in Reston, Virginia, 60. Vincent Dunstan in New South Wales, Australia, 50. Dorothy Doring, who has given to us before, she's in St. Paul. She gave us another $60 and a note saying that she thought we were great.
Now, she actually went a little bit further. Didn't she say that her late husband, who was a musician, that he was always talking about the global governance and the New World Order, and he passed away, and so we remind her of him. Isn't that what she said? Which I thought was really sweet.
Yeah, it was. It was very, very, very sweet, touching.
Note. Yeah.
Dixon Paul, 80, and he is, hold on a second. He is, oh yeah, he's in Meguro, Tokyo, Japan.
All right, Meguro.
Dixon, Paul, it's either Paul Dixon, or it's probably Paul Dixon. They got his name. Yeah, it's Paul Dixon. They got his name backwards on the thing
PayPal receipt. Yeah.
Hank Weavers or Vevers, Weavers.
Yeah.
Hank, H-E-N-K.
Yes, and Hank. And he had a nice pronunciation challenge for you, I believe.
I can't remember what it was, but I think it was Lou Warden.
Here it comes.
I can't pronounce it.
Here it comes. It's Leeuwarden.
Leeuwarden.
Very good. And the province he's from in the official pronunciation is Friesland.
Friesland.
Very good, John.
There you go, Hank.
Where the, in Friesland, they speak a language that is, I believe, akin to Welsh. And a couple other... See, it's one of these like Gaelic kind of weird places that just never really changed. And they keep their own language, a lot of their own traditions. And they
I wonder
keep,
what their cheese tastes like.
I don't know. What does Friesland know? Does Friesland have good cheese? What do they have out there? Nothing? No, they got nothing.
Nothing. Yeah. Andrew Norris gave us, Calgary gave us 50 Mark Botiford for Brandon Mixon, who doesn't have any money. So he gave us 50 bucks. He's from Mobile, Alabama. Mobile. And he says that Brandon hates the begging. And then let me tell you something, Brandon. If we weren't begging for money, we'd get no money.
Yeah. Have you ever watched PBS or ever watched or ever listened to NPR?
Oh, they'll go on with the auctions and let's go for days on end. And they have sponsors. Who are they kidding? Keith McBride, Gibsonia, Pennsylvania, 50. Ricky Pierce still contributing tonight, as so is John Kelly. And somebody from Christchurch, New Zealand, anonymously gave us 70. John Turek, Cowersport, Pennsylvania, 50. David Schwenk, S-C-H-W-E-N-K from Tulsa, Oklahoma, another 50. And then we had a couple that we missed, apparently, from last week. But we also have Youssef Tamayo in Amsterdam.
Okay.
55-55. Brian Morris, we gave last week. He says, my wife and I canceled our cable TV 2 years ago. We believe that's helped us open our eyes to what's really going on. In other words, stop watching TV.
Now, I just want to pause there for a second, John, because I think this is a very good idea. So we've already motivated a number of people who have an ongoing subscription or donation to public television or national public radio. Cancel that and switch over and give that to No Agenda. And you know, if you're given a lot and you can certainly spread it around, we're happy to take as much as possible. But in countries like the Netherlands, where you have an absolute tax, which is called Kijk en Luistergeld, which is watch and listening money, translated literally, or the United Kingdom, which has the TV license fee. So just to own a television or a radio, in fact, if you own a radio, it's a little bit less than owning a radio and a television. In fact, they have commercials running on television that say, if you don't pay, you're in the database. If you don't pay for your TV license, we'll come and fine you. We'll come and get you. So why don't you just give up your television and pay that money to No Agenda or to any of your favorite independent and alternative news sources who actually give you some real news. And, of course, we'd be first in line saying thank you very much. It was our idea.
Yeah.
So hand it over. Because
I think that's a good point. Let me finish the last
Let me finish the point up is that you can get any – if you want drivel, you can get it on any type of website you want. You can get it on those – network websites. You can still watch, you know, America's Next Top Model. You don't need a television for that. Just, you know, just use your computer and donate that money to us. It's a waste going to these other organizations.
I agree. Brian Morris gave us 5342, and he wants us to plug his wife's blog, Chiots Run, Chiotsrun. She blogs about growing your own food and supporting local farms and growers.
Oh, cool.
Which is good. Mike Caddick of Victoria, Australia, $50.50, and he hates the jingles, which is...
In the morning!
Which we don't. And finally, Jeffrey Gerlach, who we mentioned last, but we didn't give a mention of his podcastforpeace.com, asked listeners to participate in a peace practice.
Is that something we could, is that something maybe we put on the No Agenda stream?
Podcast, I don't know. I'll have to listen to it. We'll see. It might be good.
I'm going to put the Gitmo Nation Roundtable on the stream. That's kind of cool, where a whole bunch of our listeners get together once or twice a week and talk about some issues.
Yeah, I think we should do some of these things for sure.
And yeah, and also, and of course, our executive producer for today
is the illustrious Lucas Hokinson, who's given us the $101 and 1 cent, and he is from from Selkirk, Manitoba. Brr. He's got to be looking forward to global warming, that guy.
And I'd like to mention that there are a number of No Agenda iPhone apps available for purchase in the iTunes store. And I'm not sure. From some of those, I believe a portion of it is donated to this program. Along those lines, Paul Schreiber says, Adam, I have a new app in iTunes called Santa Barf. And I'll give 10% of my revenue of the Santa Barf app to No Agenda. It's a seasonal thing, so I figured I'd give them a little plug. You know, it's not really good after the 25th of December. Then it's kind of not so funny.
Yeah, I wouldn't think.
Yeah. But, you know, we'll certainly...
NoAgendaShow.com, Dvorak.org/NA to donate. We would appreciate picking it up a couple of notches. I realize it's the Christmas season. People are buying stuff for their family, and that's what I think why we our executive producers haven't been bringing in big numbers.
Someone sent me a YouTube link, Al Gore reading his poem at the Copenhagen Climate Summit.
He does it there, too?
I don't know.
He just loves his own poetry.
Wait a minute. This seems like a spoof.
What's a spoof? Floating
cotton. Forget it. It's Al Gore standing in the snowstorm.
Oh. So I think we should do a little, by the way, again, there's noagendashow.com and dvorak.org/NA and help us out. I think we should do a little real news.
Well, can you hold on before we get to real news? I want before we close the gate, because I told you I did a little bit of research.
Oh, the gate's still open?
The gate is still wide open, my friend. This is what it's all about, because I was able to obtain the latest version of the Copenhagen Accord. By the way, if you haven't seen this picture, it's on the front page of the Financial Times. I love this picture. It's all over the web as well. It is the, let's see, we have Gordon Brown, Angela Merkel, Barack Obama. They're all sitting around like they're at a PTA meeting in a semicircle. With chips and bottles of water. And this is how our leaders apparently have to have this huge negotiation. Sarkozy is sitting there. Have you seen this picture, John?
No, send it to me.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, I'll find it in a second. Well, just Google it while I'm telling the story. You have to see. It's the discussion they had to get this deal together. So I'm like, all right, so they've got a deal. And it seems there's a couple things which I think I understand, one of which... They're attempting to propose a 2% tax on all a global 2% tax on all financial transactions. So if I were to send money to my daughter in the United Kingdom, then the world government will take 2% of that money as a tax and send it to Africa to stop it from being warm. So I have an obvious problem with that. But more importantly,
it's a scam. Were they just stealing money anytime you walk outside?
Yeah. Oh, please. So right at the top. So, you know, so everyone's like reading through the agreement and, you know, and like pointing out all the pointing out all these little pieces. Oh, here's what they're going to do there. No. It's much more intricate than that. Right at the top. OK. And I learned this from reading the Lisbon Treaty. So the heads of state, heads of government, ministers, and other heads of delegation present at the United Nations Climate Change Conference 2009 in Copenhagen. Here it comes. In pursuit of the ultimate objective of the convention as stated in its Article 2, being guided by the principles and provisions of the convention, noting the results of work done by the two ad hoc working groups, and endorsing decision XCP15. So right at the top, in pursuit of the ultimate objective of the convention as stated in its Article 2. This is where you can stop reading the rest of the document. Just stop reading it and go find the convention, which is the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change from 1992. And in this, Article 2, which I've also outlined for you in my marked up versions of these PDFs, objective, the ultimate object, this is 1992, John. The ultimate objective of this convention and any related legal instruments that the conference of the parties may adopt is to achieve, in accordance with the relevant provisions of the convention, stabilization of greenhouse gas concentrations in the atmosphere, at a level that would prevent dangerous anthropogenic, so they're even talking about it there, that's man-made, interference with the climate system. Such a level should be achieved within a time frame sufficient to allow ecosystems to adapt naturally to climate change, to ensure that food production is not threatened, and to enable economic development to proceed in a sustainable manner. So then you start reading on, it's like, okay, I want to find out more about this. Dude, then you have to go look up conventions from 1989. They have created building blocks, John. It's like Legos that you have to snap together, and it's no big deal. Okay, so we don't get it done in Copenhagen. You know what? We're going to meet in 6 months, and we're going to do it. And that's why they jump around from place to place. So this is how it worked with the Lisbon Treaty. Why do they call it the Lisbon Treaty? Because they went to a different place, and then it's recognized as, oh, okay, right, that's the Lisbon Treaty. And I'm going through this, and I'm after like 3 hours, I'm like, oh, my God, you know, I see that they're building this global government. But you have to go back to 1920, where it all started with the League of Nations, which eventually became, well, along with the Council on Foreign Relations and the RIIA, which was the British version of the Council on Foreign Relations. Then they go on to create the United Nations, and then UNESCO and the UNED. Then, of course, after the world, we really, really saw the United Nations crop up. And then they started moving around from place to place. And here are the conventions you have to follow. Hold on. It starts off with... Oops. It's just crazy. I need some real help with this, by the way. Or buy me some time by donating. Okay, so Rio. Wait, first it was New York. Then we were in Rio in 1992. Then we move the whole thing over where, and they keep adding these bills. So it's then the Convention of Rio. Then from Rio, we went to Vienna. So that was the Conference on Human Rights, which was held in Vienna. And they keep adding things to all these conventions, and they're referenced all the way up to this top document in Copenhagen. Then we went to Vienna. Then from Vienna to Uruguay, from Uruguay to Cairo in 1994. We went from Cairo to Copenhagen in 1995, the UN World Summit on Social Development. Do you start to see the pattern, how it works? Then we went from Copenhagen back to New York, from New York to Beijing, all in 95, by the way. Then, of course, we were in San Francisco after the Beijing conference adjourned. San Francisco, September 27th, 1995. You were here, John, I presume?
As far as I'm concerned.
A quote from Sam Keen at that very convention. If we cut the world's population by 90%, well, there'll be no ecological damage. That's right. Then from San Francisco to Istanbul in 1996. From Istanbul to Geneva in the same year. And then from Geneva, we finally get to global governance. This is where it all starts with the convention of 1989. So I'm working, and that's a couple of websites. I'll put the links in the show notes.
You need to put together a timeline because you jumped from 1996 to 1989.
No, I went 98. I'm sorry. Not 89, 98. So I do have a document with a timeline.
So Geneva in 98 is when they started talking about global governance?
Yes.
They've been talking about population control from the get-go.
From the very beginning. And there's this guy named Maurice Strong who's really been the proponent of this. And there's a couple links to
I'm telling you, this is just to protect the wealth of the super rich.
And it's just tiring.
Let's just kill everybody, and then I can have even more money.
Yeah, and control over the rest of the slaves. That's truly what it is. So there's this one website which has a two pager, and it's really good, John. You'll enjoy this because it has little reference notes everywhere. So you know when there's some quote from either a document or attributed to a person, there's a little index number there, and you click on it, and it takes you to it. It's called Global Governance, Why, How, and When. It's a two-pager, but it's long. And I highly recommend people read that. I've read it once. I'm going to reread it again and again until I have all of this stuff hammered into my head, and so I really understand it. But this Copenhagen thing, the fact that it's falling apart, yeah, it makes us feel kind of, you know, on the short term, like, oh, okay, well, you know, hey, we got them this time, didn't we? No, we didn't. Because they're just going to do it again in 6 months, and again in 6 months after that. And they just continue to add little bits and pieces, and all of these documents are legal, and they all link back. It's like a big hyperlink web, and they reference all these previous conventions. So they'll put a little thing in this one, then they'll reference back to that, add a little bit on top, and before you know it, we may not even make it. I mean, global governments may come, and we may not even be alive, John, but I think it's unstoppable. I think they're just going to continue. Just building bit on bit.
Well,
on bit.
The model, of course, or the fractal, is the way the EU was ramrodded through a public that didn't really want it.
And that started after the Second World War.
And yeah, these things take a while.
Yeah, so it took 50, 60 years, but they got it done. The global governance, you can expect that to take a little bit longer, of course. You know, maybe I think 100 years would probably be good. But that's you're exactly right. And 20 years ago, everyone in the European Union, or the European Commonwealth that was known at the time, or the European Economic Community, like, yeah, this is good. You know, we could be an economic force. It's not a bad idea. Yeah, let's all kind of share our data. And you know what? Yeah, we'll take that global currency. Yeah, I mean, the European currency. That's a good idea. Yeah, I'm tired of those exchange rates. Of course, little did they know that they were being hoodwinked into a central bank of Europe. And then all of a sudden, well, what? Wait a minute. We've got some Belgian dude and he's like the president and we didn't elect him. How come we don't get a yes, we can change and hope little ceremony? We didn't even get the party. We didn't even get to throw a party for the dude, let alone elect him. So, yes, that's what's taking place. Funny how you don't learn that in school. Funny.
No, what you learn in school is that the UN is good.
Yeah.
Or you learn in school that the global government's a great idea.
Yeah, it's fantastic. We've had our very own listeners call up, the seventh graders. Yeah, you know, they're teaching that global government is good in my school. And the one world currency is going to rock. We can take our money anywhere. It's not going to matter, friends. It's all going to be an electronic money. If you don't mind me just harping for 1 minute, I am getting a little pissed off with this whole notion of you can only use credit or debit cards to buy food on the airplane. What happened to taking money? Have you
noticed
that?
I find it peculiar too. I know they started this up. You can, the argument the stewardesses are stealing the money. Or it's too dangerous, or they can get mugged.
Security.
I mean, I don't get it either. Or it's just inconvenient because you have to go run back and forth. I'll get you change. You know, they could have just said money exact change only. That would work. But no, they want you to use these cards are ridiculously out of control. They don't want people using cash. So I recommend to everybody just use cash. In fact, my wife noticed this interesting phenomenon, which is instead of using cards or even checks, if you just use cash to buy everything, you have a different take on what you spend.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you're actually seeing the cash go away.
Yeah.
And so you're a little more certain. You're just not buying everything like a mad person. I mean, let's face it, this whole country went into debt with credit cards because they just throw the card out there, deal with it later.
Yeah, but
you can't do that with cash.
This airline thing that happened overnight, all of a sudden, you know, first of all, we have to pay for what they pass off as food, which is basically a box of starch and chemicals. It's nice that you can still get a ginger ale for free, but everything else you have to pay for, and it's $7 for the starch box, and you have to pay for it with your card, which, by the way, takes just as long because these terminals, they have to tap out with a little stylus. And what the hell is that? They're tapping it out with a stylus while cloud surfing in the aisle. That's dangerous, I tell you. That's literally more dangerous than anything else, is having both their hands preoccupied with a stylus on some antiquated system.
Your sound on Skype changed completely.
Oh boy. For the better or the worse?
It sounds as though you went from FM radio to AM radio. It's not like it's distorted. It's just like it all of a sudden you went from FM to AM.
I think Mickey is sending something. Are you sending an email with pictures? Yeah. Of course.
How come she continues to do this during the show?
Because she doesn't care about the show. She doesn't give a shit. She's like, you know.
Anyway, you sound terrible.
Hey, thanks. So now I sound terrible. Could you just quit your mail? Just quit the email app for a second? So Skype is actually pretty smart about that. It'll downgrade here. It should get better now in a second. But were you uploading porn again? You really? Oh, bad girl.
So
anyway, we're moving towards a society where you cannot use cash anymore. It's highly discouraged. They want you to use your Visa card at McDonald's.
That way they can track you like a dog.
Yeah, of course it's
you can
all
tell
about
more
tracking.
About it. Like I remember hearing a lecture from the one-time CEO of American Express. He says, hey, with our database of purchases, we can tell if you're having an affair. We can tell where you are at any given time. We can extract a lot of information from just credit card receipts.
No, and then you have the travel passes in the Netherlands and the same system implemented in the United Kingdom, both fine upstanding states of Gitmo Nation East, which has an RFID card in it. You just pass by and your money is automatically deducted. It's linked to your debit account. They know exactly where you're traveling. And of course, not to mention that you can read these RFID chips from other sensors as well, not just the travel system. They're implementing GPS-based black boxes into cars under the auspices of carbon taxes. But of course, it'll completely be trackable. You go through the airport TSA checkpoint, no longer called security, but a checkpoint, and they're taking your entire biometrics right there, your biometric scan. Which is traceable from satellites. Duh.
So you're going to have to reconnect because now you sound like you're from shortwave radio.
Really? Is it that bad? Okay, hold on. I'll hang up.
It's actually quite funny, but...
And I don't think it's funny. I'll hang up and you call me back within a second?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And John should be calling back and hopefully we can get him back on. Okay, now I just have to connect him.
There you go.
There, yeah, that's better?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, so, another real news.
Oh, hold on a second.
And now, back to real news.
Got a couple of stories here. One of them I thought was kind of amusing. A New Zealand story for the New Zealanders. A teenager flashing her breasts in the middle of a New Zealand road paid for her drunken revelry when a distracted driver ran into her.
Is she okay?
I guess she ended up, I guess so. She exposed herself to a couple of cars from a strip in the middle of the road when the stunt went awry. If it was in the U.S., she'd now be a registered sex offender.
Oh, yeah.
And have to track like a dog. In New Zealand, they think it's just funny.
I think it's funny, too.
It is funny.
I like it.
And then we also have, I have the humorous, I've decided maybe I'll do a humorous clip every once in a while.
Oh, okay.
I got one here from the David Letterman show. You can play it.
Well, according to a new poll, Tiger's popularity has dropped to 33%. And I'm surprised because if all the stories we're hearing are true, let's just say half of the stories that we're hearing are true. It seems to me that this guy was doing pretty well in the polling.
No.
So that's right. Our Tiger Woods story.
All right. That's funny. that definitely lightens up the mood a bit. He's on the cover of Newsweek.
Is he?
Today, yeah. This week cover. I didn't buy it. Mickey had it in her hands. We were at Walgreens, and I saw her look at me. I knew she wanted to buy it because she hasn't been activated yet by the CIA. I knew she wanted to buy it, and she looked at me, and I saw her look, and she's like, oh, I better not buy this because that'd be so stupid.
Hey, read it online.
Yeah, really.
So my last bit of humor is this one, which is, a news report from Wisconsin. Apparently, Tom Arnold, the actor, was plastered and in a Santa Claus outfit, and then he was just going up to every little kid that he could find in this. And it was a snowy neighborhood. I guess he just walked around, going up to every little kid and saying, "Hey, you know where my reindeer are?"
Okay.
And so it starts off with some of the kids being interviewed, including this one at the beginning. But here's the report. It's under Tom.
He smelled like alcohol, so I knew it wasn't real Santa. Because Santa doesn't drink alcohol.
9-year-old Katie Dougherty says the Santa that ended up in her lawn was loud and had really dirty hands. She says he tried to put his hat on her little sister. 6-year-old Zoe describes him in one word.
Drunk. Yelling at him. Have you seen my reindeer? If you see my
my reindeer, you call me right away.
The girl's mom called the police instead.
He thought he was spreading good cheer, and, you know, in some lights he may have been, but, you know, I don't think that, you know, Mr. Arnold had any ill intent. I believe that, you know, his level of intoxication probably impaired his judgment.
I think we'll have to deem that.
The distraction of the week.
Hey,
on Noah's agenda.
I like the fact that a little six-year-old girl can describe him as drunk.
He smelled just like my daddy. He's drunk. I know what drunk means.
Drunk.
Oh, yes. The news will be filled with that. Of course, it has shades of the Christmas movie with, what's the guy's name who was married to Billy Bob?
Yeah, where he played the Bad Santa.
Yeah, what was the name? Was it called The Bad Santa? Well, that was a good movie.
It was actually called something like that. I'd have to look it up.
It was pretty funny. Yeah, that is without a doubt the distraction of the week. Hey, you know, John, it's been pretty quiet because, of course, it's dying down, but perhaps we should do a...
No agenda, swine flu minute.
Now, of course, this whole thing turns out to be an even bigger joke than we thought it was going to be. And I've received, you know, I receive a lot of interesting email from people who claim to be on the inside, as it were, with government and certain agencies. And what I'm understanding is that the whole swine flu thing was a red herring. And really the entire intent was to just to program the population to take drugs when the government tells you to. And that the next step, without a doubt, is going to be the male contraceptive, either vaccination or pill. And, of course, that's all part of the world depopulation program. But when it comes to swine flu, there's still a number of things that are out there as the fun doesn't stop. The Detroit Health Department is fighting swine flu with pepperoni. Yes, when kids return to school after the holiday break, each class has the opportunity to get a free pizza party if they sign up for the shots. Well, what a great idea. Give the kids some pizza. It literally, there's a picture here. Get a shot, get a pizza party for your class. Pizza party for signing up. Yeah, let me send you this link. That's phenomenal. I mean, how horrible can you be? When you get into that kind of stuff. But even worse, perhaps, in Pennsylvania, one of our producers sent this link. This is just creepy. It's like a fake Britney. These are playing in theaters, in the cinema.
Yeah, no, I heard about these. I haven't seen one. I know there's a lot of them linked on the net.
Yeah, so I'll put these in the show notes, and I'll play just a little bit of one of the songs. It starts off with a kid sneezing in front of his locker at school. And this is like fake Britney Spears chick who starts singing. They're dancing in the hallway. And then they have the, without a doubt, the token African-American kid who raps in the song. I mean, it's creepy. For 5 days, 5 days.
You're not gonna get sick from me. No, you're not gonna get sick from me.
You're not gonna get sick from me.
5 days.
5 days.
I'm not gonna get sick from you. No, I'm not gonna get
This is the creepiest thing I've ever seen, John.
Who's behind this crap?
I don't know. It's
one in one thing ain't playing. Do a few things like the show you were saying.
Put the African-American kid in to get the hip-hop vibe on the hip-hop tip. It's the same people who did that Obama video. Remember the kids in the classroom?
That was done by a Hollywood producer.
Yeah, this is done by Hollywood people. This is too professional.
Well, these guys are ridiculous, and they should think about their... or they should retire.
And then there's... watch for this one. You'll see this one. This guy has been around before, but they're going to bring him back. This will help with the HPV virus. Take a look at this picture, John. This is a picture of Tree Man. I don't know if you remember Tree Man.
Yeah, vaguely.
Okay, Didi Kaswara, Indonesian man known to the world as Tree Man, is once again battling woody growths that are threatening to cover his body.
And what is this woody growth? Well, of course, it's an extreme case of the sexually transmitted disease, human papillomavirus, HPV. That's right. If only he had gotten the shot, he wouldn't turn into a tree. And then the whole story, HPV is one of the
most... The problem with this is a propagandistic point is that it's too gruesome. Nobody even wants to see pictures of this guy.
You mean they've jumped the shark with this one? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, yeah. It's not going to work.
Yeah. But it's a valiant try. Good going, guys. I appreciate the try.
Well, if you look at we're at the swine flu minute, go to last week's or the last show's clips and find the one about the mask, because there's two memes that are floating around out there that I just spotted in the last, this one's not new, but then I have another one I want to mention, but this one's got the meme in it. It's the one about the swine flu masks.
Chief Jack O'Connell announced that two federal grants are paying for 23 million masks and gloves for California schools. Pleasanton Unified just received its shipment this week. School officials say they will use them on a case-by-case basis.
It's another level of protection for everybody, and it certainly raises people's comfort levels.
I guess that's good. I mean, because they could spread it to other kids. So, yeah, I'm glad they're doing something.
Schools encourage kids to wash their hands frequently and use sanitizers, and healthcare workers hope parents are proactive in getting their children vaccinated. Even though the Centers for Disease Control says fewer states are reporting widespread H1N1 cases, physicians say it's likely there could be a spike in January. They want to remind parents that if a child has received the H1N1 vaccine and is under 10 years old, the child needs to get a second booster shot 21 days later.
Yes, a booster shot.
The meme is that there's going to be a spike wave in January.
Yeah, second wave.
It's going to return the second wave. Ooh, the second wave. So I get that. I hear a lot of that. But the other one, by the way, which has to do with healthcare, not the swine flu, that you keep running into, and your friend, that New York congressman who I saw one of the shows.
Anthony Weiner?
Weiner. He actually said it. And when he said it, because I'd heard it two or three times, but I didn't think much about it. As soon as he said it, I said, oh, it's a meme that the Democrats are using to push the bill through. And by the way, some of the progressives, the most extreme left wingers, believe that Lieberman, by coming in and getting all the attention, he's actually doing Obama's job, because they really want this to be just a pro insurance company bill, which is what it is, because they just force people to take out insurance. But the Weiner comment, and like I said, I've heard it before, you're going to start hearing it. It's, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good.
Oh, wow. Don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good.
I've heard it three times so far.
In other words, hey, we're doing, it's not perfect, it's not great, but at least it's good. Is that what's going on?
Yeah, exactly.
Jeez. Well, there's a couple things we haven't touched on, John, which I do deem important. I'm very confused about what happened in Yemen. Have you been following this?
I haven't been following it because there's not much to... I haven't found any source to follow.
Well, so I have two reports. One from ABC News and another one from Reuters. So let me read you the Reuters one first. So Reuters, you would say, is a reputable wire service. Yemen security forces, backed by warplanes, killed up to 30 al-Qaeda militants on Thursday, the government announced, and a security source said the operations had foiled a planned series of suicide bombings. According to the government website, Yemeni forces hit a number of al-Qaeda targets, including a training center in the southern province's Abyan. This led to the killing of 24 to 30 militants. What kind of number is that? 24? Could have been 30. Including foreigners, without giving their nationality. Security source told Reuters that altogether 34 al-Qaeda militants have been killed, 17 arrested in the Abyan and Arhab district north of the capital of Sana'a. But then on ABC News, on orders from President Barack Obama, the U.S. military launched cruise missiles early Thursday against two suspected al-Qaeda sites in Yemen. So, well, who did it? What are we doing shooting cruise missiles in Yemen? Do we declared war on Yemen?
No, but you know, there's a couple of things going on with Yemen. One is, of course, it's a traditional location for bin Laden, who most people think is dead now, by the way. That's where he goes, especially south of Yemen. But one of the things that nobody wants to talk about, and the fact that we're in maybe the potential that we're in Yemen in the first place, and you can look this up on Google, is that Yemen, in the 80s, they discovered oil there, and now they seem to have found even more, and they found the natural gas field. You don't think that has anything to do with it?
Don't look over here.
Nothing to see here.
Ooh, look at that.
Nah, couldn't be. That couldn't be.
Coincidence.
No, it couldn't be any type of coincidence.
Coincidence? I think not.
And by the way, play my coincidence clip. I'm thinking that people are listening to this show. Listen to this.
It's Fridays. Four of Boston's five losses this season have come on Fridays. Coincidence?
I'd like to think not.
I think not. All four losses also at home, by the way. The Celtics' vaunted defense has allowed...
What the hell is that?
I was watching ESPN and they go, coincidence? I think not. I said, I gotta clip that.
You know, this show really is reaching people in the unknown, isn't it?
Well, I think a lot of it is subtext. I think our message gets out. We have the listeners who listen to the show are obviously enthusiastic and they're, you know, on the same wavelength we're on, and they slip this stuff out, and it's just kind of like a, you know, dropping a rock in a pond. You get these, you know, kind of wavelets that go out, and then it kind of bounces back. And that was an example of it bouncing back, and I'm sure that they've never listened to the show ever.
Here's the campaign that we really need, though. I mean, there's all these shows, even C-SPAN, that morning show where you can call up on the Democratic, the Republican, or the Independent line. That's probably the easiest one because they've got, like, interns as screeners. But any show, particularly some of these Fox guys who have radio shows, call these shows up. And when you get on the air, you know, you got to sound intelligent, which you can because, you know, you obviously understand what's going on because you listen to No Agenda. But then slip in the morning. Just slip that in. NoAgendaShow.com.
You know, I would rather have them slip in the NoAgendaShow.com rather than in the morning. But, yeah, people should call their local talk shows and they should mention No Agenda and give us some publicity. And NoAgendaShow.com is easy enough to say and get out before they stop you. And so, or you can, then you have to slip it in casually. Say, well, I was listening to NoAgendaShow.com the other day.
Yeah, in the morning.
In the morning. Right? You try to get the in the morning thing in there.
Extra points if you slip in the morning. And if you could even get in a coincidence, I think not. Well, then you're executive producer. I mean, then you've totally nailed it.
Yeah.
Rachel Maddow was snapped talking to Fox News chief Roger Ailes Tuesday night at the White House Christmas party.
Oh, it's how nice that they were all there. And the great enemy that Obama says, do not watch Fox. And meanwhile, Ailes is invited to the party.
Of course. So they were spotted together. There's a picture of the two of them. Yeah. And then, of course, Huffington Post said, hey, what did you guys talk about? And she said, well, I've never been to a White House party before, so I'm wet that I was invited. But I'm not sure about protocol, so I'm guessing it would be a breach of protocol to kiss and tell. I mean, you're a journalist. You're a journalist. You're supposed to cover the White House. Either don't go or talk about it. This is just nuts. And then to be talking to Roger Ailes, who is the man behind Fox News. Well, you're right. You know, the Obama, that's so funny. I hadn't even thought about that. Even Obama said, oh, you know, Fox News, not really news. No, this is bullshit. You know, we should deem them not news. We should, you know, they should be fall under different rules because they're not really bringing news. And, oh, hey, Roger, come on over to the Christmas party. Yeah, come on over. Come on over, hang out.
Yeah, and now that you mention it, Rachel should either be covering it or she should be talking about it. She shouldn't be. What kind of journalist goes in? This is like the non-disclosures that I'm always complaining about. Essentially, she didn't even sign one, but she's acting like she did.
And maybe she did.
You know, I never thought about it, but it's possible that they make you sign a non-disclosure before you go into parties like this.
Why not? They could be. You know what?
But somebody could tell us.
Yeah, somebody should. As a part of, I think Eric actually pointed this out to me, a couple of changes that I just want you to be aware of that I believe these might have been slipped into the, oops, did that site just break? Oh, that's too bad. I believe some of these might have been slipped into the defense spending bill, but apparently, yeah, it looks like this crap. Okay. I know what the subtext is. Federal websites will now be using cookies to track you. That has been approved.
Yeah.
So, you know, combine that with Google's recent announcement that even if you're logged out, they'll be tracking you for 180 days with a cookie.
Coincidence? I think not!
So I think people, we did get a response from one of our listeners, producers, to that has a cookie killer that's aimed at these particular kinds of cookies. I would hope he's listening now and gets a hold of me again because his mail is buried in the box somewhere.
Okay, so I think that's kind of the problem is because cookies obviously can be very handy. You know, for a number of things.
Yeah, they're very handy, but they shouldn't be used for tracking you like a dog.
Particularly not from the federal websites. I mean, can't I just view that information in some version of anonymity? I mean, they got my IP address anyway. But yeah, that would be nice. Now we're going to have to track you with cookies. So I think, John, that we should have the Nobel laureate play us out for the Sunday service because there's nothing as beautiful as hearing the man saying it in his own voice, his own words here. No agenda.
One thin September soon, a floating continent disappears in midnight sun. Vapors rise as fever settles on an acid sea. Neptune's bones dissolve. Snow glides from the mountain. Ice fathers floods for a season. A hard rain comes quickly. Then dirt is parched. Kindling is placed in the forest for the lightning celebration. Unknown creatures take their leave unmourned. Horsemen ready their stirrups. Passion seeks heroes and friends. The bell of the city on the hill is rung. The shepherd cries. The hour of choosing has arrived. Here are your tools.
I think I have to say that the horsemen ready their stirrups. It's just bone chilling, John.
What he says, this the moment of something has arrived. It sounds like it's all over. The ocean's a pile of acid and everyone's dead.
Yeah.
What decision is this? To shoot yourself? I mean, I'm not getting it.
I think we need to dissect the death poem that Al Gore is reading and do an analysis. And maybe we should do a coffee house reading.
I think we should.
Where a couple of people get together. It's not a bad idea.
I think one, you know, it should be like the vagina monologue, where one person reads one line and one person reads another line.
Monologues. The Al Gore monologues. Nice. Oh, this is beautiful. Hey, just so y'all know, we will be doing a show as regularly scheduled on Thursday, the night before Christmas. Boy, wouldn't it be nice to have a night on the night before Christmas, John?
Ooh, the night before
the
Christmas.
The night before Christmas. I think we could both support that, couldn't we?
Yeah, that'd be good.
NoAgendaShow.com, Dvorak.org/blog. The show notes, of course, working perfectly now at NoAgendaShow.com. And if you always want to find a backup, you can find it at Curry.com or Dvorak.org/blog. And so then what is our show after that? It'll be on Sunday. Are we then close to the new year? What is Sunday?
Well, I'd have to look at the calendar, but I think it's a few days away from New Year's. I mean, it would be the next Thursday that we'd have the New Year's show.
Let's see. Right. Oh, you're right. It would be the 31st. So right. We're hitting it. And guess what? We're here. We'll continue to do the show. We're not going to break for any fake holidays.
As long as Adam's recording the show, we're here.
Hold on. Let me check. Yes, we're good. We're good. Coming to you from the minimum security containment cell, which houses the Crackpot Command Center, where it has been ominously quiet outside. I don't know where they are in the demolition of this project.
Maybe they stopped.
Maybe they ran out of money.
I think they're probably just taking 2 weeks off.
In the morning, I'm Adam Curry.
And from northern Silicon Valley, where the sun has now arrived, which should warm things up, which is a good thing, I'm John C. Dvorak.
We will talk to you again on the night before Christmas. And we're looking for that night before Christmas, right here on No Agenda.